Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, beautiful day as we're recording this today.
Yeah.
You came in on the motorcycle. What kind of motorcycle do you have?
I have a Yamaha V-Star 650. So.
Oh, yeah. I think I did take a look at that. Are you going to let me ride it one of these
sure,
days?
Sure. Yeah, if you want it, not a problem. You can spin it around.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk about the way that leaving money to our beneficiaries can be a little bit head-spinning as we move in on a closing couple of shows here in the Foundations series. Tell us where we've been so far.
Well, boy, we've been all over the place. We've gone through a entire series. I don't know what show this is, like 14, 15,
it's
16.
I think this is the longest series
absolutely.
You've done.
Absolutely. Yeah, but by far, actually. Uh-huh. And so really the heartbeat of this series has been, if you come into the office, what are the questions that I'm going to ask? And not only what am I going to ask, but why am I asking it? So we started all the way back many, many moons ago with the foundations of how to name a trust, how to take care of a trust maker, because my first job is to take care of the client. Then after the client, then I can move my attention towards beneficiaries. That's really what we're going to be talking about today. We've already touched a lot about beneficiaries. We've talked about leaving things to charity, having a long-term charitable plan. But now we're going to talk about how do we leave things to kids, to beneficiaries if you don't have kids. What does that look like? What are the different ways that we can leave things to our beneficiaries? So it's been a real full series, and we're going to start heading down the home stretch here with the last couple of shows.
Okay.
So yeah.
And there's some definite safety issues you have to consider with kids, because not all kids can handle money the same, and that very much has to be part of your consideration, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And here's the thing that I really encourage when people come in, and specifically when their beneficiaries are their own children. What I've noticed is that if a couple doesn't have children and they're leaving it to nieces, nephews, or other family members, or a lot of charities, then sometimes this next thing I'm going to talk about is not in play. And what's that next thing? That next thing is, I try to get a parent to remove the parent lens. Mm. So look, we're created in God's image. And God is astoundingly merciful, graceful, loving, and kind. And because we are created in His image, we tend to look at our kids through that lens. In other words, we constantly forgive their weaknesses, and we always hope and champion their strengths. So what that does, and I have two daughters, right? They're 26 and now 28, and I know where I am looking at my girls and seeing this bright rosy picture of, oh, my girls can do no wrong. Mm. And so we take that thought process oftentimes, that heart, that emotion of we want to believe the best in our kids, into the estate planning process. And so part of what my encouragement is for parents specifically is, when we are designing things for the kids, how can we get to a more realistic picture, specifically with how they handle money, specifically with are they good with money, specifically are they going to be manipulated, or is there another voice of a spouse? So what if our child does really well with money, but we have a spouse in the background who loves to spend? Mm-hmm. And now there is a blend in relationship, that marriage, to where even though one of my girls might be frugal and good with money, what if they marry a son-in-law who loves trucks with big wheels,
right?
Who loves Harley Davidsons? Well, that's why he would be an accepted child. But
right.
Okay, so but what? So there's so many considerations when we start to go towards the discussion of how do we leave money to our beneficiaries, and pulling back those parental I don't know, sunglasses or the glasses that we look at with our kids. Some people are more realistic, and I get that. But a lot of times what I see is, oh, my kids are great with money. So we talk about one of the first questions that I want to know and that I even ask before they get in. So one of our questionnaires that we send and say, okay, tell us about your beneficiaries. One of the questions on that list is, how long would you want the inheritance that you're going to give to this beneficiary to last in their hands? So that's kind of a, hopefully, a more provocative question versus, do you think they're going to spend it? No, the question is, how long would you hope that whatever you give someone is going to remain in their hands? Now, notice how that is a question that is not, what do you think they'll do with the money?
Mm.
The question is, how long would you hope that they caretake and use this money? So,
because statistics show that most people who get a big windfall, no matter how much it is, it's gone within a couple of years.
Yeah, and it is a couple of years statistically, which is astounding to most people. Now, the average inheritance in America is a little over $100,000. So if we increase that to say, well, it's going to be $500,000. Okay, well, is it reasonable then that that beneficiary is going to take a couple extra years with their money because the inheritance is three or four times the amount? Well, maybe, maybe not, because I've watched and I've seen millions of dollars flow through people's hands in a staggering short period of time. And by the way, with nothing to show for it. And so, the amount of money is really not the issue of whether or not someone is going to be responsible with it. And I've said this quite a few times, which is how someone treats their own money is not indicative of how they will treat free money.
Right.
And it's not indicative of how a spouse will view that money of inheritance. Or kids will all of a sudden be pressuring mom and dad to say, well, now you can afford. I have a client who is now coming into a certain amount of money, and it's amazing at how quickly the bigger house is required. So, this is a current today situation of how the next car is already bought in their mind. And so there is a mentality when money hits that says, I've got to get the things that I've either restricted in my life, never had the opportunity to. And so there is going to be a certain sum of money that immediately leaves. Well, what if that is not satisfying enough? What if that is not going to be the thing that says, well, I just need a good car? No, it's the type of car that you need to have that is luxury compared to a good, solid car. Now, as the people are listening to this, they would go, Paul, I don't care. It's fine. You know, it's now their money. Well, I would encourage a thought process, just a thought process. I'm not here to tell people what to do. I'm just trying to make sure that we get to a plan that fits individuals' vision. What do they want for their kids? And so is it fine if a bigger house, if a bigger car, if a more luxurious car, if the bling bling, if the cruises, if the things that you haven't done with your money to preserve it, is that okay that the kids take your money and now do that?
Yeah, you got to think through that. It took your whole life perhaps to build your nest egg, and your kids are going to blow it in a couple of years. I mean, some people are okay with that. I would think most people have some hesitancy about that.
Well, and so, yes, a lot of people do. But here's the problem, is that if we get down into the emotion, and remember the first part of this conversation was I'm trying to get the parental lens off of somebody. When we start talking about this, the vision of, but my child won't do that. They're going to beat the statistic. If you have more than one child, statistically, only one of them will save it. And however many more you have, they are going to be more free with their inheritance, mm-hmm. they're going to enjoy it more. Mm-hmm. And again, maybe some maybe individuals will go, well, that would be good. I actually give some extra money to my kids now so that they can enjoy it. Wonderful. Mm. Great. I'm not trying to tell people what to do. I'm only trying to bring to the table a thought process and make sure that the vision that you have for your kids is going to be realized.
But it could also be a real windfall for that that child. Maybe that child has gotten into tremendous debt for mm-hmm. some reason.
Yeah.
What's the thinking, do you think, for some parents? They say, well, I don't want to pay off their debt with this inheritance. I want to – I mean, they got themselves into debt and they need to get themselves out. It's not going to be my nest egg that pays off their debt, perhaps maybe to the IRS or someone like that.
So sure.
If I give them money, the IRS is just going to take it all.
Yeah. You know? And so typically how we're going to develop an estate plan is that there is going to be a shield around that money that is going to protect them from debtors, from marriages, and other possibilities of money just being taken from them. However, actually, it's been my experience that parents are saying, well, they do have some debt, and I would like them out from under
well,
that.
Well, yeah, and that's why it could be a windfall and could be a blessing for their life.
Absolutely. You know? And so most of the time I hear, I want them to pay off their debt, but now – what was the financial habit or what was the circumstance that got them into the debt in the first place? Mm-hmm. And so do we want to create a plan then that ensures that they're going to be taken care of, but at a pace that is going to allow money to come instead of just money given in a huge lump sum? So I'm always concerned with just the lump sum mentality that all of a sudden I've got to get all the luxury things that I've lived without for my entire life instead of saving for it. Mm. And now, there are some people who've worked hard all their life and they just have not been able to save enough money because they don't have a well-paying job, but they've been hard workers. Mm. You know, that might be a different mentality. Yeah, you may say that, well, of course, I really want my child. They have been a hard worker all their life, and they had a spouse that walked out the back door on them, leaving them kids and everything else, and they have been a champion through their entire life. They just have never been able to pull money together for the things that I would like them to have a refreshment in life if I were to pass away. Fantastic and beautiful vision. Wonderful. But what else do we do with the remaining portion? So do we take a portion of it and say, knock yourself out? So if it was going to be $500,000, that's kind of where I started the numbers as an idea. Well, what if they were given 20% of that as first availability? That'd be $100,000. They could go buy the car. They could pay off things. But then what if we caretaked and had a plan of financial success to ensure their long-term safety financially? Mm. Would that sound reasonable? Or would you just want them to have access to everything? See, I really don't care. It's your kid. Mm. It's your money. Mm. I'm only here to be a sounding board to try to get the parental vision off first so that we can create a plan that is going to match what you hopefully have prayed about and thought about and your Heavenly Father has given you a vision about so that we can then implement your final act of stewardship over what you have been given in caretaking over and make sure that the plan is going to be long-term for those that you leave behind. So for kids, it's a difficult discussion point to try to get the parent to remove themselves emotionally from the conversation and really look at their children realistically so that we can build a plan that's going to match that vision.
Taking care of those beneficiaries in your estate planning, that's the discussion this week in the Foundation Series with Paul Grant. You like the way he thinks. You want him to help you with your estate plan. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
And back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, this week Paul is looking at how to best leave your beneficiaries their inheritance and different ways to do that. We want to bless our extended family or our kids, primary children, if possible, with a plan that works. And there's different ways, even in your estate planning, to do that. Maybe make it last a little longer.
Yeah.
Instead of the windfall and kind of
the lottery mentality, right?
Yeah, which is, no matter how much they get, it's gone within a couple of years.
Yeah, and do they have the lifestyle to support the desires that they've implemented? And so, you know, there's different ways that we can leave money to someone. And so we got past kind of the parental vision. So let's move into fine. Now we have a good vision. We know what we want to do. We know how to caretake. How do we then leave money? Well, we can always leave money outright. So which means that we simply write a check from the estate. As a matter of fact, most people have inherited money from their own parents in this manner, which is I just received the money. I brought it in. I brought it into my marriage. I had access. It was in my name. And my parents, I hear this a lot, my parents trusted me, so I want to trust my kids. Well, your kids are not you, and it's a different generation. And typically, clients are leaving far more money than what they ever received. Typically, not always. Mm-hmm. And so if your parents left you a sum of money, and okay, I understand that they trusted you, but everything is not equal anymore with the next generation. Our mentality is different. As a matter of fact, you've complained about how your kids spend money all these years, but now you want to trust them. Okay, well, sorry, that was a little bit of a side note. Okay, now how do we leave money? We can leave it outright. So what does that mean? That means they receive it as a check. They put it into their own bank account, and now it becomes subject to whatever life has for them as the road goes on. So if they ever had health issues, then that money would be available, but not only just available, but required to be spent. Mm. If they are married and the marriage does not work out, then that money could become subject or could be a part of the divorce proceeding because now it became community property, or there's a high likelihood it became community property. Mm. There is a presumption of law that is supposed to be an inheritance is separate property, but I have found very, very, very few. I don't know how many varies to put in there, but very, very few people who actually have segregated their inheritance and have always kept it segregated and have not used it for the benefit of the marriage. Mm. So therefore, that presumption is easily overcome. In other words, circumstances will be looked at, and if you've been using it for the marriage and there's an expectation that that money is available for the protection of your spouse, then it has probably become community property and is subject to divorce proceedings. Mm. So we have to be careful with how we bring in money into marriages. If you had creditors, those creditors could simply take it. If you're in a car accident in the future, that's a new creditor. And they could simply sue you, and it's all subject to those proceedings. Now, what if we left things in a trust? So a trust can now become a protective wrapper around that. We can leave things in a trust, and that trust, the instructions around it can say, I want my kids to have free access. Okay, not a problem. So we're going to allow the beneficiaries to utilize their inheritance as they see fit. They could pull a majority, if not all of it, out of the trust and put it into their bank account. But what we're hoping is that they actually leave it there. They leave it there as their savings account. And when they do, that there's a shield that goes around that, that should they become divorced, if they are in that bad car accident, if they have a creditor who is coming after them, that is going to be a pretty protective shield when the trust is administered properly. Notice that language. When it's administered properly. So everything depends on the administration to make sure that the entity called a trust is going to be properly administered. When it is, that is a pretty darn strong shield and very protective. So now we can almost have the best of both worlds for beneficiaries. We can leave things in a protective entity. That protective entity actually has good tax benefits as well, but so that we get good tax benefits, it's protected, and if it is your heart's desire, we can give them a lot of access to it, even unlimited access. However, if you have a beneficiary that needs some better protection, so we just talked about maybe there's a beneficiary that needs long-term financial protections, well, we can also work in some instructions into that shield, and now it creates a mechanism by which we have some guidelines, some financial guidelines of how the money is to be given to them over a period of time. Remember, we talked about $500,000. We said $100,000 could be done right away, but then as to the other $400,000, maybe you want monthly distributions. Maybe you want an annual distribution. Maybe you want income distributed and it protected and left for grandkids. There's so many things that we could do. Really, an unlimited clean whiteboard is presented before us. So the question is, what do we want to do for the benefit of that individual? And that becomes a part of the trust. So we can leave things either to them directly. How do we do that? We just simply write it into the trust, and or for individuals who use a will can only give money to an individual outright. Oftentimes we get outright by leaving a beneficiary as a TOD, as a beneficiary on a bank account or on an IRA. So when they are listed as a beneficiary, a transfer on death beneficiary, then they are going to get that outright. In other words, it's just going to be given to them because the financial institution has instructions. You told them exactly what to do with your account, and your account says just give it to them. So there's multiple ways to get a beneficiary money just to their hands.
How long can one of these trusts go on?
Yeah, like by Washington law, 150 years.
150?
So that's probably, you know, 2.5 to 3 generations worth of protection. And when we set up something like that, so if we had much more and a beneficiary was going to get much more than $500,000. So we have been blessed in our life, and all of a sudden that figure creeps up to having another zero on top of it. And there's $5 million that a beneficiary is going to be watching over and have to protect. That can become a generational plan now. And so oftentimes we want to bring people in and we want to start thinking generationally. How much do your children need versus how much do you expect to be caretaken for the next generation to ensure that this is going to be a generational plan? Money almost never lasts 3 generations. Almost never. So if your children, because they were next to you, watched you build wealth and watched the difficulties and the struggle that you built it by, then they may have a greater appreciation of not wasting it. But then their kids haven't seen that the same way. So they become a little more liberal with the spending at that generation. And if that money has continued to grow, and if we put it into multiple generations, by the great-grandchild generation, that money is going to be liberal. Gone, and there's just not going to be much left. Typically, the money from old generations were very restricted trusts to have the principal, that $5 million, produce income, and it just sit here and produce income and and beneficiaries for multiple generations just received the income of it. And $5 million, if we had 4% income, that'd still be a couple hundred thousand dollars a year if my math is correct. And I didn't even use a calculator. So if that is right, that is fantastic. If it's wrong, I didn't use a calculator. So that could be a pretty hefty amount of income generated out of that. So 3% out of 5 million would still be $150,000 a year of income being spit out. And then that money starts growing. And so now, generation by generation, that income becomes more and more. It's not difficult if you have that type of money that you can leave to somebody to create multiple generational plans. And how can you do it? By letting the income spit off and give a certain smaller percentage of how much could be used just beyond that. So there's multiple ways to create generational planning, ways to help beneficiaries and think long term. It just depends on what type of money you have. What is your vision? That's always coming back. What is your vision for your family? God has put this into your hand. He's blessed you. So let's figure out what is the next step that you see from His plan and His heart for your family. That is my passion, to capture a client's heart and passion for their family and make sure that the document is going to actually perpetuate that for their beneficiaries and maybe even generationally.
Foundational Questions in Estate Planning, the series continuing. I think one more episode.
Yes.
You like the way that Paul thinks about these things and you want to find out more about his services. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts. All of this legacy podcast can be found there. Upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.